The Hold Steady. Boys and girls in America, when you hear this indie rock ballad, only means one thing. Barrels for Luga.
Barrel.
Washington Post sports columnist joining us. Hello, Barry. What up, man?
What up, B?
How are you guys?
Man, we are fantabulous.
You are, listen, you're clearly very smart. You went to Duke. All right, we'll start there. I would say you're a wordsmith. You've written books. You've written columns. Your column after the Nats won the World Series is one of my favorite I've ever read. How would you describe the home run that Shohei Ohtani hit last night?
Oh, man. I mean,
just
there's a reason.
Rocket.
I mean, people are asking me, you know, I'm going to cover the World Series. Who do you want? And it is just clear to me that sign me up for Dodgers and Yankees, because this sport needs stars to be in the spotlight. That dude against Judge and Soto and Cole, I mean, that's appointment TV where baseball is not often appointment TV nationally. Sign me up, man. That'd be a show.
Yeah, dude.
He mashes.
He mashes. Quickly, I obviously want to talk football, but I've been really intrigued by these playoffs so far. You think we're getting Yanks-Dodgers?
I mean, the Yankees look overwhelming for the Guardians at the moment, and it's hard to take anything from an individual baseball game because so much depends on, you know, who gets the ball the next day. But it's hard for me to see. Now Cleveland has to win 4 out of 5 to beat the Yankees. I just don't see how that's possible. And I thought last night was huge for the Dodgers because they felt that series felt like it had tilted toward the Mets significantly with that game 2 win, in which the Dodgers, you know, bullpen game did not work out at all. So I thought that was huge for the Dodgers. And yes, I think the Dodgers are the better team. We know one thing about the baseball playoffs is that the better team over 162 is not necessarily the better team over 7. But I do think it swung back to the Dodgers' favor last night. And you know, not in small part because of the guy who hit that moonshot. He is an issue to deal with every single time he's up.
He's been
he really is.
I told JP earlier, man, every time he hits some balls like that, I start thinking that the guy was made in a lab some damn well.
That's what it seems like, bro.
He's unbelievable, man.
But think about this, too. Like, he had the season that he had that everybody's talking about, the first 50-50 season in history, and next year he's going to pitch, too. Like, you talk about
that's
made
crazy.
In a lab. Like, it's just that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Let me ask you a question, though. You see how good he is hitting the ball, and you know if he pitches, he had Tommy John, he'd probably get hurt again. Would you keep pitching him as much as they were, or would you limit that and let him become more of a hitter?
So the Dodgers are precise in everything they do. They are analytics forward, but they also understand the human element, and I don't know what their plan is, but I can guarantee you their plan is not, let's just roll them out there every fifth day. Like, they will take care in, because, you know, if he has Tommy John again, you're not just losing a pitcher, you're losing your best hitter. It's a really, I mean, there's a reason why he's making $600 million, because he's two players, not one.
Right.
And so, and he might be worth $600 million just as a hitter, Brian, like to your point. I think you're right. They will do something that's very careful that allows him not only to pitch through the season, but, you know, they get to the postseason every year, to pitch in the postseason when they need their starters are pretty fragile at the moment. They need another arm down there, and they've got one already on the roster. He's just not pitching.
All right, let's switch it over to football. Talking with our friend Barry Svrluga here on the BetQL guest line. You can read Barry's work in the Washington Post. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Barry Svrluga, Svrluga. Jaden Daniels, we're 6 games into this thing. How impressed are you?
I mean, I don't think I could be more impressed. I think everybody has, you know, when you go into the season, even if you're watching in training camp and saying, oh, he's impressive and the ball's not on the ground much and his accuracy's good, his athleticism's good, there's always that caveat of, well, he's a rookie quarterback. There's going to be ups and downs. And while I still think that is probably true, like, name the ups and downs. Like, he wasn't great in the Tampa game. He ran too much. He didn't keep his eyes downfield. Fine. First NFL football game. Since then, he hasn't improved every week, but the lack of egregious throws. I mean, if you think about his quote unquote mistakes, the one that stands out is the interception in the, you know, inside the five against the Browns. But go through all his other throws. Like, what he has two picks all year. The other one wasn't even, you know, he airmailed it a little bit. I am just kind of blown away, because in six games, no one would say, well, he's played six NFL games, this is the finished product. Like, he's been really, really good, and he's probably going to get better. And every time I say that, I'm just kind of like, what world are we living in? Because this is not the experience around this franchise.
But, man, like, you've been around different sports, and there are people that come in and they actually put the work into it, and you see them get stuff like that from it. You know, and I think the thing about him, he's exhausted everything he can do to become the player that he's been.
I totally agree, Brian, and that's another thing we didn't know going into it, is, like, this guy is infectious because he's not treating himself like a star. He knows to be a star, the work has to go in, and you don't hear anybody say anything other than that. I mean, I'm not going to list name names here, but there have been people at his position in this town who were stars and didn't have that air about them, that did.
Want me to name them for you?
Different. Yeah, exactly. But you know what I mean? It's like, we've seen it.
Yes.
We've seen it. And to see the opposite of it is kind of astonishing. Like, the ability jumps off the page. Like, I can't get over the 66-yarder to McLaurin because it was a broken play. He's rolling out. He's about on a dead run, and he drops it in the only place he could put it. Like, that play will last with me. But the work that goes in to be able to make that play is as important or more important than the athletic ability. And so it's hard for me to believe, and everything is colored by, like, if he stays healthy, but it's hard for me to believe that if he stays healthy, you're not looking at the complete package for a decade or more.
Dude, you don't want to get ahead of anything, especially with a young quarterback kind of booming in the NFL. But I agree with you. It gets harder and harder to see the other avenues outside of, like, significant success. And I think that gets cemented every time he talks. Yesterday, so Jaden does his weekly media availabilities on Wednesday, right? And for months now, since we started talking to this young man on a regular basis, we just bombard him with football questions. And so yesterday I was kind of like, what else do you do? How do you unwind? And he said he likes to watch basketball, and, you know, when he puts the work in, he knows when he goes home, he can relax a little, and clearly he puts the work in. But, Barry, I then asked him how used to the spotlight he is, because he is in the spotlight, dude. Anywhere you look, they're talking about Jaden Daniels. And he's like, yeah, you know, it started to turn up last year at LSU, but the NFL is that much more intense, and, you know, I still kind of feel a little awkward when people are talking about me, but I've gotten used to it. His maturity, Barry, at every turn, damn near blows me away. And I'm curious if you've had a similar reaction just when you talk to him and hear him.
Yeah, I have. And I think, you know, if I was just coming in off the street and listening to most of his answers, I think, you know, they're pretty bland mostly. And that is not a criticism. It's actually kind of a compliment. Like, he'll do the media stuff because he's the quarterback and he has to, but I don't think it's an important part of his day. Like, he needs to get through that so that he can get to the important stuff. And I think that's really to be admired. And then I'd say, guys, and I everything here is the risk of overreaction, but I don't consider myself like a hot take person. If you look around the division, I mean, this is just staggering for me to think and to say. But if you go through the division, not only do I think Washington is now the favorite to win it this year, but if you look organizationally, and that's coach, quarterback, front office, you could argue that Washington and ownership, Washington is now, you know, the best advantaged team franchise in the NFC East. Now, Philly has had great ownership and great success for a long time, and they've won a Super Bowl in the not-too-distant past. But their coach is bringing his kids to post-game press conferences as a human shield and jawing with fans, and you wonder about the relationship with the quarterback there. Like, that seems tenuous. Jerry Jones is going on the radio in Dallas threatening hosts that he's going to get him fired. And Brian Daboll clearly doesn't want his quarterback, and he and his GM are on shaky ice up there. Like, Adam Peters is in he's a very secure, strong GM, it would seem to me. They have their quarterback. The owner is new and putting resources into it. And Dan Quinn seems to have the players really behind him. Like, I don't think it's a stretch to say that this franchise that has been so unstable and such an S show for so long is now the best positioned franchise in the NFC East, which is just astonishing for me to think.
Does the quickness of all of that shock you?
Yes.
I know it happens over time, but it doesn't happen that damn quick.
Well, I mean, I think I wrote in the week one, you know, the Tampa game, I was like, you can't turn around an ocean liner in a phone booth, right? Well, they damn near almost have turned around an ocean liner in a phone booth. Like, I can't – the trajectory with which the quarterback has gone up, and then you assess Adam Peters' offseason with some evidence of what it was. And, yeah, do they need help at cornerback? Do they need an edge rusher? Do they need another weapon on offense? Sure. But this wasn't going to be a one-year – complete roster rebuild, but name the bad move that he made. Name the bad draft pick. Like, it's, they may have solved their left tackle issue with a third round pick. So I just, you know, I've been gushing about this in a way that is almost irresponsible. But I can't walk it back because you see what they've done and how it feels. And it's just such a stark contrast, and as you've said, Brian, just so fast that I'm like, I don't even know where my headspace is. It's just odd.
You know, I've heard people say, you know what, we all in this together, and we all are working for one common goal. But it literally seems to be happening with this team. I heard someone in their security department make that comment to me. I think it was after the Cardinals game, and it was like, you know, when you have everybody working for the same – no, it was the Cincinnati Bengals game. When everybody's working for the same goal and everybody really cares for each other as if it's a family, this stuff comes together quickly. And I'd be damned if it's not happening exactly like she stated.
And, I mean, I think we can't ignore the fact that, you know, because they won the Bengals game and because they started 4-1, like, it's a lot easier to get people to believe and to buy in and to pull for each other when things are going right. So there's a chicken and egg thing there, for sure. But I was not an advocate of hiring Dan Quinn. I thought they should have gone for an offensive coach because you wanted the offensive head coach to be in lockstep with your quarterback, who, you know, you want those two to come in at the same time and be on the same page. But, you know, I was wrong on Quinn as a person and a motivator for sure. Like, he says the right things, and even if it's a little slogany and jargony and catchphrasey, he's definitely got buy-in, and he knows how important buy-in is. From, you know, that's, it's hard in a sport where there are 53 on the roster and you're going to use 70 players over the course of the year to get everybody in lockstep, and he really seems to have gotten it that way in the early going.
Barry, he seems to have more people than that because he got a lot of former players that are buying into his stuff too.
Well, that matters around here too, Brian. Yeah,
it makes a world of difference, and I, you know, because
he's also embraced former players in a way other guys haven't.
The more I talk to the guy, I'm like, you know what? Because he has a little something where he knows how to deal with each person in an individual way. He doesn't feel like, oh, one way works for everybody.
Are you ever going to tell the story about what Izzo's doing with
one
the
day.
Special teams?
One day.
Okay. All right. but, Barry, kind of because we live in a microwave society that's far too often dictated, at least for the fan base by social media, the trade deadline is the top topic, right? Adam Peters honestly really hasn't missed. If you want to say the McManus thing, but McManus is now on a roster. Like, clearly something occurred there, whatever. But Adam Peters really hasn't missed. If you're Adam Peters over these next couple of weeks, what do you think in trade deadline wise?
I'm thinking long term. I'm not letting the results from 6 weeks, very, very positive results, take my eye off the fact that this really is.
Thank you, Barry.
Well, it is a long term. As much as it's turned around in a phone booth, like I said, it is a long term fix. And those picks that he's done a good job gathering, and a third for Jahan Dotson when two other, you know, A1 receivers went for third round picks, seems like a pretty good return at this point. I think those picks are valuable, and I think they're valuable for getting the 53-man roster to the shape you needed to get it to, not just to make it into, because this year is really about, like, are you going to make the playoffs? Are you going to win a division? That would be very, very positive, obviously. But I don't think anybody, even with how positive everything has been and how well it's gone, is thinking this is a Super Bowl contender, right? That's what you're trying to build. And I don't think you should take, I don't think he should say, oh, holy cow, we're 4-2 and up by a game in the division. Let's trade a third rounder for a stopgap thing. And I also would be cautious about if the locker room continuity and everybody marching in the same direction is one of your greatest strengths, which I think it is. You bring in a big personality from elsewhere, Hassan Reddick or something else, you're risking a very real chemistry thing you have going for yourself. So I would just let the trade deadline pass and stick with what you've got going and think that maybe that's enough to win the division, because I think it probably is.
Yeah, man, real quick, you've been around this town a long time, and you've seen Darryl Green perform on the field, off the field, and still here being a big part of this community. Your thoughts on him and getting his jersey retired this weekend?
I mean, my thoughts, Brian, are like, wait, his jersey isn't retired already?
yeah,
how, same how thing I would 28? Think. Yeah, man, like, that guy defined the position before it was a glamorous position. Like, he was the fastest player in the NFL. Like, he's pre-Deion, man. Like, he allowed Deion to be Deion. Like, he's such an iconic, forget, like, this town, which is obvious. Like, you know, he's getting the key to the city on Saturday, and that seems like a cool gesture. But in the history of the NFL, like, if you think of cornerback, like, you think of Darryl Green in, if it's not first, it's second or third. Like, that's the guy, right, who defined the position for so long. So put the 28 up there, man. It should have been there a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, I mean, Darryl Green made the all 100, you know, the he's made every team,
he made every
there
team
is, he's
there,
on it.
As and, good as he was on the field, he was that off the field. And I think that right there is something that, you know, many people aspire to do,
and
but not everybody can.
Why don't the three of us have a real conversation for a second? Organizationally, they were hesitant to retire any numbers. And then over the last, whatever, 3, 4, 5 years, that has changed a bit. Mm-hmm. But Daryl never allowed Dan to push him around. However Dan liked to interact with people, Daryl wasn't doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a reason he's going in now, that Dan is gone.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. On a million different levels.
I mean, players recognize players, I think, right? So I think that makes a lot of sense, JP.
Yeah. Barry, before college hoops starts, I do want to have a Cooper Flag discussion. We don't have time to do it today, but I'll probably see you Sunday, man. Thanks for making time for us.
All right, Barry. Appreciate
you,
brother.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Appreciate
it. Man. Barry Sferluga, give him a follow on Twitter, Instagram, at Barry Sferluga. We got to go around the NFL. B, he doesn't miss very often, But I'm not sure Mike Tomlin is making the right call. Nobody go anywhere.
B. Mitch here. Big changes are happening in the DMV. And just like our upgraded football team, now is the time to upgrade the comfort in your home with a Rood HVAC system. I did, and the difference is night and day. My family and I felt the change instantly. And if you don't have a Rood system yet, trust me, you're missing out. Plus, there are tax-eligible options for you in the DMV. And if you're in Maryland, you might score some utility rebates. Head over to Rood.com, find a local pro partner, and get ready for winter. Always remember, if it ain't Rood, it ain't right.
5 out of 6, B.
Yep, that's real good.
Pretty darn good.
Real good.
I'll be honest, though. I thought Caleb would win this week because he threw for 4 touchdowns in London.
Who he played against?
The Jags. 23 of 29, 226, 4 touchdowns and a pick.
You might throw for 3 if you play against the Jaguars.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Jaden's running. It's funny. I think it was Nikki Jabala that asked him yesterday. Somebody asked him. I believe it was Nikki. What does he do? So every time you get Rookie of the Week, they give you this belt, like a WWF kind of belt. You know what I mean? Like a heavyweight champ belt. And I think when it gets spread out, if, you know, there's 17 weeks in the season and say 11 guys win it, the belt might be kind of cool. You know, like you're a third round running back that wins Rookie of the Week and you got the belt. That might be something you hold on to and, you know, display.
We do rings and stuff in the NFL. We don't do belts. Give them something else. A belt is for wrestling.
So he got asked, what does he do with all the belts? And you could tell he was trying to be respectful, but, like, he doesn't really know. He's like, yeah, they're in the house. Like, I kind of think my mom's in charge of that stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to hang them up on something.
Well, now he's got 5 of them.
Hey, get some more. Hey, one thing I never had a problem with was getting awards.
Sure, sure.
Keep getting them.
I wouldn't know. I don't get many. But for all the people holding Jaden Daniels tickets for a Rookie of the Year, and a lot of people bet on him, you got to be starting to feel pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know what will happen if Caleb gets hot down the stretch. Honestly, the Rookie of the Year stuff next week is going to be a big deal because they're playing head-to-head, even though they're not truly head-to-head. I don't know where Drake May is in this. We're going to go around the NFL real quick. Did you see he had to get a MRI yesterday?
Yeah.
He ended up on the injury report with a knee thing and went for an MRI yesterday. By all accounts, he's fine. I don't know. Seems a little weird, though. I wouldn't be thrilled if the dude plays once and then has to go get an MRI. But I wanted to ask you something, Brian.
This is the NFL, man. Everybody, I don't care how big you are. Like, I hear people talking about the size of a person. Hey, big people get hurt, too.
So, you and I are both Mike Tomlin fans, right? I think Mike Tomlin's really good at what he does. Justin Fields to go to Russell Wilson. Pittsburgh right now is 4-2, playing really good defense, doing enough offensively to win games. Offensively, they rank 20th in points, 26th in yards. It ain't great. Defensively, they're 2nd in points allowed, 8th in yards allowed. Mm-hmm. They get after the quarterback. They do the little things well and grind out wins. They are coming off their highest point total, but they're also playing the Raiders. But they're coming off a 32-13 win and might make a quarterback change. Justin Fields came out and said, hey, man, I get it. I didn't play well enough to keep the job. Fields, through 6 starts, is completing 66% of his passes for 1,100 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 pick. He's averaging a little less than 200 a game. And then if you consider what Fields does with his legs, he's got 230 yards on the ground and 5 touchdowns, mm-hmm. Averaging about 40 yards rushing a game. He does have 6 fumbles. I don't know that those are all lost, but he's put the ball on the ground 6 times. Mm-hmm. What do you make of the move?
We were talking the other day, and you mentioned that Fields doesn't pass the ball as well. Russ is a better passer. This league is about passing.
Russ was the better passer.
I think he's still better passer than Fields.
Fields, I mean, it's only 6 weeks. He's completing 66% of his passes.
He's still a better passer than Fields.
Okay.
Okay, we look at last year at Russ game, and we all knocked him last year. You look at his numbers. He was much better than what we thought. Russell is the veteran guy who probably can handle the ball a little bit better than Fields and things. But let's be real. Russ is on a one-year deal. If you can get him to, since he was, they started the other guy, if he comes back and plays better, you can get something great for him for 1 year for $1 million. They're not paying $30 million, they're paying $1 million. And you can go back to Fields, because Fields is a younger guy. He can learn something from him.
What about disrupting chemistry and just what they've got going?
I believe the fact that they're going to Russ, somebody has been complaining about something that's not working. Let's be real.
George Pickens?
Receivers might be complaining that, hey, man, we got to at least see if it – because, dude, I'm tired of running wind sprints. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, the thing about Mike Tomlin is damn good at what he does.
Yeah.
For him to be making this change, he's not just going totally against everything. Something is making him make this change. And I don't think it's ownership. Okay, I think it's some – listen, bro, locker rooms talk. Mike understands locker rooms. Somebody saying something to say, look, man, let's try it out and let's see.
Mike definitely understands locker rooms, and you're probably right. What do you think happens with Russ at the helm?
Well, I think if Russ just goes out there and just keep his head above water, his defense is good enough to keep them in the game. You know what I'm saying? So Russ is basically in the situation he was in when he was a young dude. Goes to a team. They have somebody in front of him. Matt Flynn. Russ gets into the game, and you got a defense that's remarkable that gives you the ball back and give you more opportunities. He might be able to find his old self again. Might go back to being a human being instead of the alien that you think he is.
He is an alien. There's some irony, I think is a fair word here. I believe Matt Flynn got paid in Green Bay. But Matt Flynn came in when Aaron Rodgers got hurt. I think he had like two good performances.
He had a great game
in the playoffs.
300 yards passing and stuff like that. Then that's when they gave him a $20-something million deal, something like that. Then they drafted Russ, and he was gone. Flynn was gone in no time.
Gone.
I have to tip my hat to the ownership over there in Seattle. We just gave this guy money. Like, no, we're going to go this third here.
So Russ gets the job over Flynn. Flynn only got the job because Rodgers got hurt and he got to play for a couple games in Green Bay.
Yeah.
You know who the Steelers play this weekend? Sunday Night Football?
Are they playing against the Packers?
The Jets.
No, the Jets. Oh, boy.
So, I mean, this is a turn back the clock
matchup.
This is
a defensive matchup right here, brother.
I mean, it's going to be – it sure seems like it's going to be Russ Wilson versus Aaron Rodgers in Pittsburgh. And
then again, I think that may be part of the reason why they're putting Russ in this week. It's the Jets defense, which has a lot of talent over there.
Yeah.
And they feel that Russ can probably better take care of the ball than Fields can, but we will see.
Sure will.
We will see.
Coming up at noon, Kyle Bailey from Charlotte lets us know what's going on with the Panthers, I guess. Nobody go anywhere. B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Commanders defensive coordinator Joe Witt is addressing the media here in Ashburn where Brian and I are sitting. We will join it live in progress.
Opportunities, sometimes you get your opportunity, you become a star. So I'm excited to see the guys that are going to come in and play. And we always talked about rolling with a deep crew. So they got to come in and be ready to rock and roll. So with that, I'll take any of your questions.
Hey Joe, when you talk about like communication issues, is it what happens there? Because sometimes it looks like maybe a lot of guys are playing the right coverage and maybe
there's one guy.
What is it? So is that a communication or is somebody not recognizing
something? It's a little bit of both. Communication is sent, receive, and acknowledge. So there was two cases the communication was correct that was sent. All right. It wasn't received by the person that needed to get it. And, you know, bad things happen. One time, this communication that was sent was wrong, and the guy, he received it, and he played what was told to him, and we let a free runner go. And so either case, I got to do a better job of making sure that it's sent properly, it's received, and it's acknowledged, and we play it the right way. is unacceptable.
And then with you look at the defensive line with obviously John out, what have you seen from Johnny Newton the last couple weeks that, you know,
he's trending in the right direction. He's a young man that has explosion, that can you know, shoot gaps, that can play with big people, because he has power. He's a very strong man, and I'm just excited to see what he's going to be able to do with more reps. We're gonna probably move him more down the line like we've done with Payne a little bit in some of those spaces. So he's gonna get the opportunity to play more, and we need him. We need him to play well. I'm sure he will.
When everybody was putting the roster together back months ago, and Frankie LeBoux's name comes up, how much prior to that had you had a feel for everything he could possibly bring, and what was for you the process of being like, wow, okay, this is somebody that makes sense for us?
You know, first, Frankie plays the play style that we aim to want to play, you know, and so and I don't want to get into comparing players, but the way that we utilize Micah in Dallas is the way that we utilize Frankie here. We play him off the ball, we play him, you've seen him at the end, you've seen him at a three technique, you've seen him zeroed up over the center. So very, very similar to those things that we did with Micah. We blitz him when he's off the ball. He's a dynamic player. We try to get him on the back as much as possible. We try to get him on the lineman that we think he can beat as much as possible. So he's a stud that we tried to feed, and we have to keep doing that.
And with Duran, obviously with John out, mm-hmm. sure more is expected of him. I know stats don't always tell the story. In his last game, he didn't record a stat of any kind in mm-hmm. the standard book. Is that a reflection on how he played in that game, or is that just an aberration in terms of how?
You know, sometimes that's going to happen. I'm not going to just dive into stats. You know, totally. He's given us what we want for, you know, the run game. All right, they ran for yards. It wasn't because of him. All right, it was some other issues that they ran for. So, you know, he's one of our leaders, and he's doing the things that he needs to do.
You guys held the Ravens pretty well at the early, you know, in the early.
We started off the game the right way, yes.
So was it solely just communication that changed from that point on, or were there other things that?
Well, you know, first off, they're a good team. Okay, so let's make sure they were going to get some yards and get their, you know, some of the contested catches and some of the, you know, scheme runs where, you know, Lamar, we might have been in a single high defense and he ran the ball. All right, he got 8-12 yards. Some of that's going to happen against them. They're good. The issue is when we make a communication and we give up a free runner, because they don't need help. All right, and if we do what we're supposed to do, they might score 20 right there, okay? All right, and with our offense, 20 wins the game. But when you give up those explosives, you get 30 put on you, and you lose a game. Again, a game that you should have won, that we should have won. But we didn't. Should have, could have, would have. Yeah. All right? You know, so I'm not, you know, I'm very frustrated about it, because I'd rather a team come out and just beat us. All right? And then I can, I don't know if I can live with it, but it is what it is. But it's hard to deal with when you help a team beat you. And so that's the answer there.
And this may be a dumb question, but what are some of the challenges when, you know, you go from playing more zone to playing more man? For the guys on the back end, what's really the challenge in adjusting?
When you're playing more man?
More man coverage on the back end.
I mean, it's now you have your guy, your discipline is on, all right, what's that man's skill set compared to your skill set? What routes does he run? If you're pressed up, inside, outside release, what are you getting? When you're playing more zone-listed coverage now, you can see the formation. You can play looks to own, which you really don't play as much when you're playing man. You're locked into your individual guy. And we do a combination of both.
Coach, do you feel like your second, third-level defenders are attacking outside D-gap runs aggressively enough right now?
That's a good question. I think at times we have, and at times we haven't. From a crack replace standpoint, sometimes I believe that, you know, we've been a little bit late at times, but sometimes also we've gotten upfield too much. And so it's been, you know, I want to say popcorn, where, all right, the end might get upfield too much, and now it's a crease, or we've shut it down with the end really well, and we've gotten cracked with the backer, and now we got to have support from the outside. So we have to, you know, take that popcorn away and just play solid. You know?
And then there's some defensive coaches who will be okay giving up, you know, 3.5, 5.5 yards on a run here and there to prevent the big chunk play in the passing game, mm-hmm. As long as you shut them down, obviously, in the red zone, force field goals, get takeaways. Are you in that school of thought, or do you have a different view on it?
It depends on the opponent. You know, if we feel like they have a guy that's on the outside that can really get vertical, okay, all right, we're going to have to cover them up sometimes, and if they hit us for, you know, 4 or 5 yards there and there, but we can't let the explosive out. You know, that's what can't happen. If you're in a shell defense, if they get 4 or 5, okay, you can live with that. They can't get 12, you know, and we're letting them get 12. You know, and so that's what we got to do a better job of. And so that's where it is.
Coach, when you're describing some of the miscommunication challenges, is that kind of, when you look back at the film, was that some of the challenges you saw in the coverage of the Ravens wide receivers? So Zay Flowers.
Oh, Zay just had a good day. Zay just had a good day. All right, he hit the screen early on. We probably misfit it from a standpoint of should have had one outside and inside, and then the big guy's coming. I can't think of any of the plays that were the four that we really had communication issues. There were none with Zay. You know, Zay had a good day.
And what challenges do you see looking ahead to this coming week? What challenges do you see that the Carolina Panthers offense could give you all?
Oh, well, the first thing, you know. what's his name? Jackson, the young man, number 5. He is Johnson. Excuse me, Johnson. So I hadn't seen him, and so everybody had been talking about how good he is, and I hadn't seen him. And then I put the film on, and I was like, oh my goodness, this kid can separate. This kid can play. He's been at Pittsburgh. I hadn't been around him, so he's dynamic. He's a dynamic young player that I enjoy just watching. So the running back runs hard. He's really good. He reminds me of the guy from Arizona. You know, runs downhill. He's a puncture runner. Sets the edge and then he tries to get back down. They have two really good guards that can block and move people. So a quarterback that plays on schedule as much as possible. That's been in this league a long time. Been against him a couple times, and he knows where to go with the ball. He knows how to get the run checks along with the pass checks. He's very smart. So you know, they're an offense that has weapons, and we have to make sure that we control them.
It's the NFL. Everybody's got weapons. Kyle Bailey joins us next.